Hi and welcome back to another episode of Britstrapped. Nick's away this week, so we're lucky to have British bootstrapper Robin Warren, the founder of Corello. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Martin.
How are you doing?
Yeah, very good, thanks. How are you?
Excellent, yes, really good, thanks, really good. So, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I'm Rob Warren. I'm the bootstrapper single-man team behind a product called Corello, which is, it's a dashboard tool for agile teams using Trello, so like burndown charts and cumulative flow diagrams, that kind of thing. And I've been working on that for about a year now. Prior to that, I was a software developer and then, you know, ultimately like manager, and ended up as CTO for a small software company down in the southwest here, which I worked at for about 11 years until I took redundancy last January from that.
Right.
Yeah, and then so started then with zero income and zero, plenty of ideas, but nothing definite to work on, and been sort of bootstrapping over the last 12 or so months.
Yeah. So when you were working for the firm and you were made redundant, so was that a bit of a jolt, a bit of a wake up call for you, or did you have a plan set out already?
So I'd been sort of bootstrapping evenings and weekends up until that point. So I think the first thing I ever deployed was in about 2011, and prior to that, I was building things, but never actually got anything out the door. And I'd been fairly seriously, for some of those years, you know, trying to get something out there to get some revenue and failing all that time. Like I said, I was CTO, so I kind of knew that these redundancies were coming. The company was changing. It's still operating and still very good, but it was changing. It wasn't a company that I was going to want to be at, and it just seemed like a good opportunity to go and try and do this full time. Had my first child was on the way as well. Last January, my daughter was born, so I didn't think I was going to have as much time, evenings and weekends, to, you know, sort of idly sit there on a Saturday and code for 12 hours.
Yeah.
So it kind of felt a little bit like, okay, this is the last chance I've got to try and make this work, but I'll take the redundancy money and some money I'd saved up. So I'd always been saving up money, intending to do something like this.
Yeah.
It wasn't really a shock. It was more, it was planned, but I was still nervous about it, and I still wasn't 100% sure it was the right decision. So I did a lot of thinking in January of, you know, is this really what I want to do? Or is this even a good idea, even if I want to do it?
So did you start out with a bunch of ideas that you wanted to investigate?
Yes, so I had a couple old products that were deployed and had users, but were making no money at that time. So I started off with those two and sort of tried a few different ways that I might evolve those, and ultimately gave up on them within sort of a week or two. And then I had a big list of ideas in Evernote. So sort of, I'm sure a lot of people do this, you know, it's like you're walking around, an idea comes to you, so you put it in there. So I had a lot of ideas, sort of categorized into B2B or B2C, and then whether they were big or small. So I just looked at all the small B2B ones, because I didn't really want to try and build a consumer app, and started trying to evaluate some of those, and then started really focusing on the idea of a plugin to an existing platform.
So, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was that you felt that plugins to an existing platform was the best way to go, did you think?
I can't remember why I settled on that, but I think partly I'd seen it seemed like a good way to go for bootstrappers, for solo bootstrappers. You know, there's a lot, it sort of limits the size of the thing that you're building in some ways. Because, I mean, a plugin can be huge, obviously, but I think a lot of them are achievable for a single developer. And also, you've got a ready-made marketing channel for it. And it was useful. I mean, a lot of the benefit, I guess, was also it was kind of self-validating, because what I was doing really was looking at plugins that were popular in one platform and then going and looking at other similar platforms. So I was looking, the main one I spent a lot of time investigating was the idea of abandoned cart emails. So, you know, if somebody's on your shopping site, put a few things in a cart and then disappeared, and they get an email 2 days later being like, hey, how about that, you know, remote control car or dress that you were thinking of buying, and try and get them back. And that's sort of fairly popular for a lot of shop sites or shop platforms. So I was just trying to look if there was others which didn't have that. And it's just sort of, well, okay, this thing's already popular over here. If I build one over here, it'll probably work. And I had a sort of fairly sensible revenue model that you're taking a cut of the reclaimed revenue, basically. So yeah, sure. Yeah, I think that was some of the benefits in my mind, that it sort of, it helped sort of close down the huge list of potential things I could go and investigate, and it felt like something that I could probably build and get to revenue on the time frame I had for myself then, which I then ultimately ended up completely ignoring. Yeah.
So how are you, so the, you mentioned about validation there, that you've got, you know, you can, you have a marketing channel, which is like the integration marketing side of things. And did you try any ways of validating these ideas?
So the way it sort of went, so I spent sort of February, I guess, doing this, looking and trying to validate an idea. So the first one was the sort of two previous sites I had, and I had some customers or people I'd emailed. So I was, with that, I was very much talking directly to people and being like, okay, I think I could build this service into this other thing. So one of the sites I had up was a thing called HooliMail. So it was for pre-launch startups who are collecting a list of email addresses. And every time somebody signed up, it would send you research on the person who signed up to your list. And ultimately that failed for various reasons. There were better options out there, and most of the people not using those were looking not to pay any money. So weren't really a good target. But I had people on that, so I was emailing and saying, okay, how about a tool to, you give me your email list and I'll give you research on the sort of content that they're sharing online, the people they follow on, you know, who, what sort of content you should maybe be creating for them, that kind of thing. So I had people that I was contacting through that and building little proofs of concept. With the plugins, it was a lot more, it was just kind of like, you know, this thing works over here, I'm going to assume it could work over here, assuming that, you know, the platform I'm building for has got some recent reasonable amount of usage, has got a app directory. I was doing a bit of emailing the platforms, I think, as well, and sort of trying to work out if they would help with promotion in any way, which the usual answer was, if you get successful, we will help you with promotion, but, which is fair enough, I guess. So I wasn't worrying too much with that. When I got more into, I guess, traditional validation efforts was when I hit on the idea for Corello, which came out of left field, really. It wasn't part of the process I was going through looking for plugins. Oh, right. So
how was that born then?
So that was a friend, Tom, who runs a content marketing agency in Bristol called Future Content. And I've known him for quite a while from sort of, you know, his local entrepreneurial meetups and that kind of thing. And we met up in January, and he pitched me on joining his business as the sort of first tech person. So he was looking to get funding at the time and sort of maybe grow his business, and wanted somebody to handle all the tech that they were going to need to expand on. So they were, you know, typical early stage business. It's a little bit bolted together, and he sort of wanted some custom software built for various things, which I said I wasn't really keen on, because I wanted to be a product guy and wanted to be building something that people were going to be using. But I did offer to go and spend a day with him and his colleague to go through all the problems that they had, help them prioritize them, come up with a bit of a plan and say, okay, you know, these ones here are probably doable within a few months if you get a developer in, and these ones are doable if you've got all the developers who work for Microsoft and you've got 20 years, you know, sort of like work out what they can and can't solve technically, so that he could go talk to others and sort of use that there. And out of that, I didn't really think about it at the time, but the next day it sort of dawned on me, a lot of the primary issues he was having were with getting data out of Trello, and one of those issues, I was like, well, I think I could solve that one, and I know that one would save them 2 to 4 hours every week, so that's got to be worth something. So I sort of quickly emailed him, said, do you mind if I build this? And then the next week sort of took him in a little proof of concept. So
excellent.
Yeah, which I think
so that went well when they saw the proof of concept.
Yeah, there was some swearing of the, you know, this is effing great kind of array, and we need this now. So I think I had it deployed for them the next week, and we sort of went from there basically. So it was about another 6 weeks after that until I officially launched the proof of concept. But it's an interesting, I mean, you see people on forums asking, you know, okay, I'm killed my old project, I'm looking for a new one, how do you think I should go and find an idea? And it's hard to say whether it would work since I just did it the once, but I think it'd be an interesting idea to think of, you know, finding a meetup group, going along and trying to say to people, not, you know, I know the sort of traditional way with customer development is all that, you know, what's your day like, you know, what are your problems, but going and saying to people, you know, I'm a developer, and I'm willing to offer you a week of my time for free. What would you have me work on? You know, and sort of focus people that way on, like, you know, what do they actually need fixing? And then, yeah.
I think that's a good idea. It's interesting that your friend was in a kind of a techie kind of space. So he's fairly technologically proficient. And so it's a bit more difficult, I think, when you've got sort of small businesses that don't necessarily have much technical skills, because they don't really know what they want.
Yeah.
But you could probably do something similar, I think, to try and tease out some ideas like that.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's ultimately very tricky, isn't it? Finding a good problem to solve. And there's not one quick solution that just makes it work. So
yeah, I think it is. So was that the death of all your other ideas then, basically? Did you just decide to go straight away head on into Corello?
Pretty much, yeah. I was still pretty cautious about whether it was going to work or not, which I think is just my temperament generally, you know. So I didn't really believe necessarily that it was going to work out, but I was getting, it felt right. You know, he couldn't be the only person out there using Trello who was struggling with this. I was getting positive feedback from other people I was talking to. I sort of just went head down on that. And I think at that point was kind of thinking, okay, I'll give this one a go and try and validate it or kill it as fast as possible. And then maybe there's time for one more effort at something this year before I, you know, need to go and get a job because I've run out of cash.
Right.
I definitely wasn't looking at anything else at that point, but it was still kind of a question at the back of my mind of whether this was the right idea.
Yeah, sure. So where did you go from there? If you had your one customer effectively, how did you find more customers?
So the thing I was doing for the sort of 6 weeks before I launched was a lot of different stuff. So I got a few introductions from Tom to other people who are using Trello that he knew. Which got me one company using it who ultimately didn't become customers, but they used it and then sort of gradually stopped replying to my emails. I emailed all the people from my previous bootstrapping effort and just sort of said, you know, hey, email last week about closing this down. This is the last one I'll send you. I'm going to stop spamming you guys now. If any of you are Trello users, send me an email. So I got a few responses from that and set up a few Skype chats and got, I think, two or three people using it. Then it was a lot of different little efforts. So yeah, going along to local meetup groups. So at the time, I mean, now Corello is really mostly software development teams, I guess, sometimes marketing agencies, but it's really focused on those sort of agile Scrum and Kanban use cases. But at the time, I was really thinking it was going to focus on people more like Tom's business. So the marketing agencies that had multiple boards with a board per client, and they wanted an overview of all of those boards. That was a problem that he had an issue with. So I was going along to marketing meetups or anywhere meetups where there might be a lot of agencies and discovering that most people hadn't even heard of Trello yet. So I think I might have converted a lot of people to Trello at those meetups, but not got them ready for using Corello at the time. I was looking for blog posts, people talking about using Trello in that way and sort of making direct contact with those people if I could. Looking on Twitter, trying to sort of contact people there. I think I emailed a couple sort of local meetup lists and things like that and managed to get a few people to respond. What I had over those 6 weeks, though, it definitely wasn't that sort of dream story you hear sometimes of, like, I started talking to people and everyone was like, this is great, and through many. I ended those 6 weeks with the same amount of customers or people promising to pay me. I still hadn't started charging anyone as I did after that first meeting with my friend, really, which was just him.
Right.
Other people had expressed an interest and been, you know, if it had this, if it had that. So, yeah, those 6 weeks were fairly frustrating in that way. But I would say it was still useful to talk to a lot of people. It sort of clarified a few things in my mind about, you know, who could and couldn't get use from it and what the sort of base feature set really needed to be. So I had a few people using it who were giving me feedback who just weren't willing to pay their $40 a month that I was going to end up charging them. But I sort of felt a lot of pressure to really just get it out there at that point, because it was like, this isn't validated at this point. And I can't really justify spending any more time on it unless I'm confident it's going to go somewhere. One of the meetup groups I went to, I'd met, and I was chatting to people about Corello. I'd met a guy who is a freelance journalist for The Next Web, and it sort of fit quite well with what he wrote. So he was up for writing an article on it, so that was good. And I submitted it to Product Hunt and did a show HN, basically. So I did 1 week of just did all the sort of throw spaghetti at the wall kind of things you can do that come under the heading of this is not a marketing plan. but it was, which I think is a shame sometimes that people denigrate those sort of approaches, because it worked really well for me to get a lot of people who are interested and demonstrate that there was interest in a tool for getting information out of Trello, even if it wasn't exactly what I'd built yet. You know, it sort of, it really helped validate and sort of push me on. So, yeah, so that was what I went through on the validation, and it's not a great success story, I think, on that side of it. And possibly I should have done it differently. I don't know, but yeah.
So you basically, you had an article being written about you, and you had the Hacker News stuff going on. Did that bring a lot of sign-ups, or was it just sort of drive-by type traffic?
So I got 2,000 sign-ups over the next, that sort of week-to-week period, I think. It was probably about 1,500 in the first week when it all went up. So it got, yeah, it got quite a lot of people trying it out. At the time, there was a free tier, and I think it was probably like a 21-day free trial on any of the non-free tiers, or you probably just went onto the free tier, and then you had to decide if you wanted to pay for one of the paid tiers after a few weeks or something like that.
Right.
And a lot of people were actually quite capable of just running on the free tier at that point. So that was one of the changes I made later. But so it's very easy for people to sign up and give it a go without any giving me a credit card up front or anything like that. Yeah. And I mean, of those 2,000 people who signed up, what ultimately ended up happening, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous story, you know, sort of typical naive bootstrapper. I was sort of sitting there counting the money, obviously, on like after I'd seen all these people sign up, just sort of wondering where I'd go on holiday in 3 weeks' time when they all converted. Yeah. And I ended up getting another one customer from that. So, I mean, 100% growth from that one.
Yes.
but yeah, I sort of had an interesting chat with Josh Pigford from Bear Metrics. So I was emailing people who'd signed up and who, I think everyone got one email that was, it was that Sean Ellis approach of checking product market fit, you know, saying how disappointed would you be if you couldn't use Corello again after tomorrow? And then what one thing would you change or improve or add to, you know, make it better? Yeah. And you're sort of gauging how many ones and twos on the disappointed, on a sort of rating of 1 to 4 you get. And then looking at the twos, I think it is, and seeing what they would want improved. And I was getting a lot of threes back and the occasional two. But I also started emailing a few people who seemed to be fairly active users and saying, oh, could we have a chat on Skype? And I just happened to notice Josh Pigford's email address on the sort of, I was using Intercom and sort of looking through who'd signed up the day before, saw that and was like, okay. So I sort of sent him an email being like celebrity customer, which a little giggle, because he obviously doesn't think of himself as a celebrity, although he blatantly is. yeah, so he sort of hopped on Skype ostensibly for a chat about how to use Corello and how it could help, but ultimately just gave me a 30-minute advice session on what I should do with Corello. And he sort of clued me in the idea that it wasn't 2,000 people who were about to become customers, or even 2,000 people who were interested in what I'd built or was planning on building. It was 2,000 people who had a problem roughly in the area that I was building in, that they cared about enough to give me their email address and access to their Trello boards, but was quite possibly not what I was building. So what I needed to do was talk to as many of those people as possible, find out exactly what their problem was, and then start working out what the product needed to be from there. So that was, I think after that, I just emailed pretty much everyone who signed up, got an email saying, you know, thanks for trying it out. Can we have a chat on Skype? I'm really trying to improve Corello. Would really appreciate your insights onto, you know, what your problems are and how I can help solve them, basically. So that was kind of the turning point, I think, for Corello on me, where I felt that I was getting some validation, because those conversations, instead of going at it, I guess, saying, this is what I've built, can you tell me how great it is and do you want to use it? It's sort of like, this is what I've built, but let's not talk about that. What are your problems? Tell me about that. And sort of found this very strong set of software development teams and managers and product owners on software development teams who desperately needed more information out of Trello, but also really loved Trello and their team loved Trello, so didn't work somewhere else. And you know, once you've got a development team of 7 people or more, you're generally happy to pay $40 a month for a tool which helps you. So I think that was, yeah, when the validation sort of changed for me, which, yeah, wouldn't have happened without that sort of spaghetti at the wall, not a marketing plan, show HN and product hunt kind of approach.
Yeah. And what kind of response rate did you get to the email to these signups?
For asking people for a Skype chat?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure. So my guess is I probably got about a 10% response rate of on an email, you know, like just somebody send me feedback on an email. I spent probably about 2 weeks or a week and a half just on Skype a lot of the time, a lot of Skype calls in the evenings, obviously, because it's, you know, people in LA or whatever. Yeah. So probably about, I don't know, 50 Skype chats, something like that, over sort of that period. That was probably getting up to sort of 2,500 people who tried it out at that point. But yeah, it was a pretty good response rate, which was, that was one of the things which made me think, okay, there's some signal here. You know, people care enough about this that, you know, giving up 30 minutes of your day for a Skype chat is not a trivial thing for someone to do. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it's funny because people talk about having an audience and marketing to your audience before you even build a product.
Yeah.
And obviously this is kind of going a slightly different way, what you've done there. But then in other terms, once you've got those 2,000 signups, they kind of are your audience almost. And then what you were doing, it sounds like, is kind of like finding out from that audience what it is they actually needed.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think it'd be an interesting way to go again, or if people out there are thinking how to go about this kind of thing, is an interesting approach is to build a proof of concept that you think, okay, I'm happy with this. Ideally, I guess you've got at least one customer who's saying, yeah, okay, this works for me. But you just need that little bit of thinking yourself, okay, is this, you know, it's not 100% what you want to build. It's probably 40% what you want to build, but you're kind of happy enough with it and then put it out there. Do a lot of those one-shot kind of things and get a few people in. But then, yeah, treat those, like you say, as that audience that you then try and work with.
Mm. Oh, that's great. So so at that point, you had all these calls that you'd done and you'd got some great feedback. What happened then? How did Corello change from that point?
So at that point, it was a change of plan from building for agencies with multiple clients and a board per client to building this tool for agile teams, basically. So Scrum, and primarily Scrum at first, just because it's a larger use case out there, I think. But there's a lot of Kanban teams using Trello as well. So building that feature set out. And that was it, really. So I went head down again coding for the next 3 months. Didn't really pay too much attention to marketing. I was listed on like the Trello, plugin directory that they had. So that was actually sending trials over each week. So I was still getting new trials and they were still getting all the emails, and I was getting new Skype chats with people and getting more confirmation that, yeah, you know, we'd be interested in, you know, features X, Y, and Z that are useful for Scrum teams. So that was the big change, really, was just in that direction. And then I was just sort of back head down trying to build that feature set out.
Wow, so that's great. So once you'd got those additional features built and what it was you needed, did you have like a relaunch or was it kind of a bit of a drip?
Yeah, absolutely. So I spent, so when was that? So it's sort of May, end of April was kind of my initial proof of concept launch. Then early May was pretty much entirely taken up with Skype chats or like occasional person meets. So late May, I started working on code and all that stuff. And at the time, I still had this rough target of making enough money to live on by the end of July. Okay. So at the time I thought, okay, I'll build all this out in a month to mid-June, and then, you know, I'll deploy it and some of these 2,000 people will turn into customers, and that's where, like, you know, that sort of first batch of revenue will come from, basically. And it's, like, remembering that I used to manage, you know, a reasonable size software development team and understand planning and not just pulling dates out of your ass and naming them. So like mid-June went flying by, and then into July. And it wasn't actually until late September I actually had even just, you know, the basics of what I wanted to deploy ready to go, which is, it was interesting. I sort of learned a lesson then, I think, just on the minimum amount of process you need for a team even when it's just a team of one, you know. So I started estimating again, and it's just because it got bloody depressing if I was, you know, going through work that I thought should have taken me a week, but because I hadn't really thought about it up front, it was actually going to take me a month to do. And it's just sort of when you're in week three of a 1 week feature, it's kind of depressing. That was, I joined a mastermind group as well at the same time through the Mastermind Jam site. I think a lot of people know. So that was good as well, because Brett, who I was on the calls with there, was very good at highlighting what I had actually achieved in the 2 weeks. And, you know, stopping every 2 weeks and looking back made you realize, okay, well, I did this, this, and this, even though I didn't get what I wanted to get done. So I spent 3 months just, head down coding, getting all that stuff ready, and then did a fresh launch of the list. So I think I had probably 2,500, 3,000 people maybe on the list, or that's probably people who tried it out. So probably more like 2,000 people actually were still on the mailing list. And I've been sending them occasional updates with, you know, this is what I'm working on, but not a whole lot of stuff. I did a fairly bare bones relaunch then. I know I could have done a lot fancier launch process with, you know, 4 weeks of this is what's coming, this is what I'm going to tell you about, now here's a date when it's coming, and then here's a date it's here, get your special discount now, and then, you know, 24 hours before it finishes being like, this is your last chance. All I did in the end was I did have a discount, so I think I gave them 50% off for 3 months if they signed up within a week of getting the email out. I sent an email to like 10% of the list, so say 200, 250 people, just to kind of see how it went and see if there was a lot of feedback from them, positive or negative, I guess, primarily if they were coming back and saying it really needs X, Y, and Z. I didn't hear a thing from any of them. People signed up, tried it out. It looked like some of them were active and were going to become customers, but I wasn't getting a lot of feedback from them. So I thought, well, sod it, I'll just email the rest of them the next week. So I thought about it a bit. I didn't think about it too much. I did one email, I think it was maybe three emails they got, you know, so it was like an email saying the new version is here, and then an email saying you've got, you know, this is your last day to sort of sign up or something like that. Yeah, exactly. That was it. But yeah, nothing too fancy really. And I possibly could have done a better job, but I think I was just feeling the pressure at that point. So that was late September, probably early October, by the time I actually did the launch to the big part of the list rather than the first 200. And I didn't really feel like I had another month to go at that point. I was just really desperate to start getting the revenue up. Because I mean, at that point, I think I was making, maybe a couple hundred quid a month. You know, it's not enough for me, my wife, and my daughter to live on. And it was just very important to me to get it out there and sort of revalidate as well. You know, it's like, okay, I'd had a lot of people saying that they would buy if it had feature X, Y, or Z. I wanted to get it out there and sort of prove that now and start seeing that growth.
So, did you have any pressure from sort of commitments you'd made? Like, yes, you'll have that feature by such and such a date.
I don't think so. I was pretty cautious. That was one of the lessons I did remember from managing a team, is not to promise dates too much. So I've mostly avoided any kind of date pressure with Corello. I've just kind of told people I'm working on this, and it will come at some point. So no, it was all sort of internal, my own sort of desire to get this done. You're sitting there, you know, you're burning through your savings at whatever rate every month, and sort of thinking, what am I doing?
there's a lot that goes on in the back of your head, isn't there, that you that don't come out in these stories quite a lot of the time, but as you're living it, it's quite a difficult thing to put up with.
Yeah, absolutely.
So from that point on, then things were, you had a bit more of a is it product market fit, would you say?
So I think after I'd had those discussions with people, it was sort of problem solution fit, product market fit. I think I got earlier this year, which, I mean, I've sort of had some numbers I jotted down from somewhere on how to gauge product market fit, which is like sort of 5% or more of your trials converting, somewhere between sort of 0.5% or more of visitors to the website converting, some stuff like this. And through the end of last year, my trial to paid conversion rate was around 1%, maybe 1.5%. I think I was telling myself it was 2%. Which I don't know how I managed to get that number, but it made me feel not too bad. And it's only since the start of this year were mostly fixing lots of bugs because I got a lot of features out very fast. So one of the first things that happened once I got all this stuff out, it was all the mostly the Scrum features, so burn down charts, stuff like this. I immediately had one customer person come back being like, this is amazing, but what I really need is a cumulative flow diagram. And that was on my list of, okay, I'm planning to do this one day. So it's like, okay, I will build that. So a week later, I had a cumulative flow diagram out for him. And then, you know, the next feature comes in, somebody's saying, I want cycle time. You're like, okay, again, it's on the list. So a lot of people were asking for stuff which was on the backlog, but I just hadn't put it in yet, which was a great sign that I was going in the right direction. They weren't asking for stuff I hadn't heard of or considered.
Yeah, sure.
But I was knocking a lot of stuff out quite fast. And there were a few bugs here and there, meaning occasionally people's charts wouldn't show or the data wouldn't be quite right. Usually that would correct itself overnight when sort of things regenerated, but it was, I think, putting enough people off when they sort of immediately signed up, saw something wasn't right, or, you know, their burn down chart didn't display it immediately and it was just sort of spinning for ages. So fixing those issues in January, I think, was a major change that I did. I did a few other things then trying to improve the onboarding process. But I get the feeling that it was just sitting down and fixing bugs that got me from around 2% to sort of around 5-6% nowadays of trials converting. So I think it was only earlier this year, I guess. So maybe I was product market fit last year if you ignore the bugs. But, yeah. So yeah, we're sort of still working towards it then, which I think is, yeah, it's one of the sort of mindset changes I've had to have last year, that you sort of, you think these milestones come along, like, you know, you've got the idea. And that's problem solution fit. And it was actually, it was 2 months from getting the idea to getting to problem solution fit. Or I had an idea in roughly the area that I needed to be, you know, and it's sort of like the same with product market fit. It's sort of, you know what you need to build, but still until you get it out there and get the feedback from people, there's probably as long to go again in terms of building to finish it off.
Yeah, sure. So you, what are you relying on for marketing these days?
So I am just now starting to seriously think about marketing. Most of my traffic, I think, comes from being in the Trello plugin directory. So yeah, that sort of engineering as marketing, or the integration marketing.
Yeah.
I've done a few experiments, so I'm sort of trying to follow that Traction, Gabriel Weinberg approach. And,
oh, right, yeah.
And yeah, so I've done a lot of experiments there. So I've done a few paid experiments with, you know, very simple, putting up one ad on Google AdWords, not even sending it to a proper landing page, just sending it to my homepage. Doing the same with Twitter, Facebook, doing some perfect audience retargeting, this kind of thing. Right. And just doing those for a week, spending maybe £100 on each one and being like, okay, what does it cost me to get a conversion on each of these? And then now I'll go and do like a good version of that. So just this week, actually, I'm going to start trying AdWords again, because that seemed to be working out better than the others in terms of the what it cost me to get someone to convert. So I just need to confirm that I can do that again and then start trying to put some of the improvements in. Done a bit of content, but again, it's sort of more at an experiment level. So a few blog posts based on partly just ideas I had, like, you know, so one of the things I wrote was how to build your own dashboard on the Trello API, which turns out to work quite well, but it was just kind of guesswork you know, people looking for information on the Trello API who are developers who want to build a dashboard might be interested in just paying me money instead. And I knew that there was a few ways I would probably be able to promote that with, what's the site that has all the APIs listed? I should know, because I did a sort of little mini version of it on their site for them anyway, so that got me a bit of a link and a bit of traffic.
Right.
Okay.
How did you know what you were doing with all these different ad platforms? Because I've tried a bit of it myself, and I'm by no means an expert, having thrown several hundred pounds at it. I've heard that you can spend £500 just getting up to speed on what it is you need to do. How did you do it?
Yeah, so I wouldn't say I did know what I was doing up front. It was kind of irritating. It was one of the things I was Googling around for, you know, AdWords course or Twitter, Facebook ads course, you know, you just wanted some, like, I would have happily paid, you know, $30-$40 to someone for a little mini course on, you know, here's what you need to know, but there didn't really seem to be much out there. With AdWords, I got the old, you know, here's £75 free when you spend £25 on a new account. And as part of that, I had a phone call with someone who set up, you know, I had a couple ads running, I think, and they sort of came and tweaked the headlines and put a good call to action, stuff like this in. So that's obviously all they do all day. So that was fantastic, and I think it helped improve things. So if anyone's gets that offer, it's definitely not a waste of time to talk to someone at Google about that, because they do.
That's good to know, because I've seen that before, but I never knew whether it would be worthwhile.
Yeah, it was definitely the guy I talked to anyway was fantastic. Really sort of, I think he quite liked it because it was such a small little campaign. It wasn't like thousands and thousands of pounds. It was just like, okay, here's a little campaign. Let's just sort of put a few little tweaks in, and it wasn't too complicated. With Twitter and Facebook, I mean, I asked a few questions of my mastermind group. So Brett in my mastermind group has been doing a lot of Facebook ads, so sort of talked through that. I think one of the mistakes I made was probably spending too much too soon on some of those. You see, I see a lot of people now talking about using Facebook ads, but having quite a low budget and getting really good conversion rates. And then when you put the budget up, Facebook's pushing it out to people who are less and less of a good fit, and your conversion rates go down. So, and it's one of the things I'm looking at this week, actually, is if I reduce my budget on some of these ad spends, would I have actually got conversion rates closer to what I was getting on AdWords?
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes sense thinking about it, but at the time I was kind of like, if I spend 20 quid in a week, that's not going to give me enough data to prove anything. You know, I mean, if I get 100 trials, I might get 5 customers. So if I get 6, is that a really good result, or is that just kind of random happen chance that those 100 convert better? And getting 100 trials would be currently quite expensive for me on any of those platforms.
So
I didn't really fully know what I was doing. I think I Googled around. I found some links on Growth Hackers that sort of gave some advice on creating decent ads for Twitter and stuff like this. But I didn't want to do too good a job up front, because I think it's one of those mindset things with coming to marketing and not trying to think of it in an engineering sense. It's like, okay, now I'm going to do AdWords and it's going to be brilliant. So I'm going to do the best AdWords campaign ever and it's going to work out.
Yeah.
Because there's so much stuff out of your control that could mean that it just doesn't work. So it's like, I sort of didn't want to overthink any of them, get something out there and just get a benchmark of what a crap campaign looks like on each of them. And it was that, you know, AdWords was about 10 times cheaper than any of the others. So even if that was down to my crappy ads in some way, I don't think it's going to be 10x the difference. So
Yeah. Makes
sense to focus on AdWords and then maybe, you know, come back to some of the others if I really want to.
Mm. Did you look at LinkedIn?
I did. So I published an article on InfoQ about a month ago. So I wrote one of those big, you know, how to do Scrum with Trello articles based on everything, everyone I've been talking to, how they were using it and what all the sort of best practices seem to be. And I was going to publish that on my own blog, but I thought, okay, this could be a good opportunity to get something out there as a guest post. So I got in touch with InfoQ and they were up for that. And when that went out, I wanted to promote that in a few places for a couple of reasons, partly just to experiment with LinkedIn, Facebook and Twitter and see how that worked. Partly because on InfoQ, they've got a kind of top stories thing on the right-hand side. So getting more people to my story would move me up that, which would get me more people looking at the story, which would hopefully get more people coming over to Corello.
Right.
So I spent, I think, about 100 quid on each platform testing that out. I'll get the numbers up, actually, because I've got them in front of me. LinkedIn, I think, was atrocious. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah. So let's get the numbers up. So
what did you do on LinkedIn? Did you do a sponsored post?
So I did a like a mini overview post on LinkedIn of what I'd written on InfoQ.
Right.
And then said, you know, if you want to read the full story, it's over here.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, is that a sponsored post then that I sort of promoted
that?
Yeah,
I think that's a sponsored post, yeah.
So I spent about, 100 quid was my limit on each of them. So I spent like 100 quid on Twitter, 63 on LinkedIn and 78 on Facebook. And I think I got 260 clicks on Twitter, 17 on LinkedIn and 16 on Facebook. So it was like around 4 quid a click on LinkedIn, around 5 quid a click on Facebook and about 40p on Twitter. And I was getting like page likes and follows and things like that, but I don't know how many of that's just, you know, spam. people following you kind of needlessly. So, yeah.
Did you get any conversions as well into actual trials or anything?
I don't know, because they were coming from InfoQ at that point. So I didn't have any UTM code set up. So I wasn't tracking people specifically coming from InfoQ. But I did have a few people. So they'd email me asking some questions, and I would send them a link to the InfoQ article, and they would come back and say, oh, that was you? I didn't realize, because I read that, and that's how I found Gorello. So people were definitely coming over and signing up as a result. I've not really looked in analytics to see what the result of that was and see how many people came from InfoQ and signed up, which I probably could work out. I don't know. I mean, that's the other thing. I don't know if those two people that went from LinkedIn both signed up. But I mean, even if they did, 17 clicks, you know, it's still...
It's expensive, isn't it?
It's expensive, and it feels unlikely that all of them will have come and converted into trial customers. I mean, possibly with other approaches, it would have worked out. But I mean, that was it. It was the same link on pretty much all of those: Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, going to the same place. And it was just worked out a lot better on Twitter for whatever reason.
Oh, cool. So that's the plan from now on, then? You're pushing the marketing in terms of perhaps some ads and things to try and get more people on board?
Yeah, so mostly marketing, a little bit of trying to improve activation as well. So since the start of the year, kind of moved out of adding a lot of big features into sorting the activation out. There's actually a couple of big features I do want to add now, which I think will also help improve the activation side of things, because people are getting in touch and I know that those are the features they're waiting for, but also trying to spend time on marketing. So I've got a Marketing Mondays now is my thing. So every Monday is...
Right, startups for the rest of us.
Yeah. So that's, all Monday is marketing, just to make sure I spend at least one day on it. But actually, at the moment, the thing I'm working on most for the marketing is this Slack integration. Just because Slack's kind of exploding. I've had quite a lot of customers get in touch and say they would really like to see their burndown charts in their Slack channels. Makes complete sense. So I'm going to build that out. So that's another little feature which might help activation a little bit. But
a bit more, maybe they've got an integration page you can get on as well.
Yeah. So they've got an app directory. The ideal would be if I could get some promotion from them. But I mean, they're so huge. I don't know if they would really care about a little pony like me versus their unicorn. So we'll see.
Oh, that's cool.
But working on that.
Excellent. So have you got a plan? I mean, do you see Corello effectively replacing what was your full-time income?
Yes, absolutely. So me and my wife are due a celebration this week. So that's one of the things I took from the Traction book, actually, is to have revenue goals, like targets that you're getting to that are attached to something meaningful. So we've got our next-door neighbors babysitting, and we're going out for a meal on later this week to celebrate getting to the point where if we didn't have to pay any taxes or business expenses, we could live off the money that we're making from Corello.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So so that feels pretty good. So I mean, at the start of the year, I didn't think I was gonna get there, and certainly not this fast. But I had a couple wins marketing wise earlier this year, which sent a lot of traffic and trials over. So hopefully now that we're at that, that's slowed down the rate that we're going through the savings enough that we can afford to keep on working on this for the entire year. And I would expect in the next couple of months to be able to make a living off of it, so long as nothing ever goes wrong with the car or the house or anything. And I'll see how far it can go from there. I mean, I think, you know, like I was saying last year, I was quite cautious and very much like, you know, I don't know if I want to assume that this is going to work out, when I was still sort of trying to validate things as much as people were sounding interested. I still don't want to count my chickens before they're home here, because it's like, it could start slowing down, real level out, and there's an upper limit to how far it can go. But it feels good. There's, you know, still getting a good amount of trials each week. People are converting at a reasonable rate, and Trello just seems to be exploding as well, I think. So it's sort of a good...
So what's the future hold? Do you plan on running it as a solo entrepreneur, or do you think you might employ people? How do you see it panning out?
So I will probably remain as a solo entrepreneur, I think. I may get people in on a sort of contract basis to do odd bits and bobs. I'm certainly not planning on going down the route of hiring anyone full time at this point. I mean, at this point, I can't actually make a living off it myself. Never mind paying someone else more than just a subsistence living off of it. You know, so I need to get it up to a point where, you know, I'm sort of financially okay.
Yeah.
And then where there's enough money that somebody else could be financially okay as well. I talked to some friends who are very much like, you know, it's working now. You're a dev. You need to go and hire the marketing guy, you know, and you need to sort of take this thing up. Go and get investment and all this kind of thing. And that's not really the way I want to go. I think I'm more sort of Andy Bryce kind of approach, you know, work at it on my own as much as possible. I think where I would change is if it feels like it really needs it. You know, if I suddenly start getting loads of signups each week and customer support is failing, then I'm absolutely not going to let the product and customers suffer just because I want to run a one-man business. You know, I'll run the business that I need to run. But
sure,
yeah.
So how do you deal with, you mentioned support there.
Yeah,
I think your customers are effectively worldwide.
Yeah.
How do you handle the support with, you know, you're in a different time zone to a lot of the customers?
Yes. So I use a tool called Calendly for scheduling meetings. So I've been using that since all those Skype chats last year. So that's a good tip for anyone looking for a way of scheduling things without having to just do email back and forth or time zone conversions. But mostly it's email support. I try and respond to people pretty much immediately when emails come in. And obviously because I'm sitting on this, you know, full time, if I'm in a position where I can be distracted, I'll go and sort of quickly reply to people when an email comes in. I send them an email offering a Skype chat if they want it. And I get an email from me on like day two or day three, you know, like from the founder saying, hey, welcome. Thanks for signing up. Let me know if you've got any feedback. So kind of very actively encouraging people to get in touch with me personally. And if anyone gets in touch and asks questions about how to do this, that, or the other, I'll usually answer, but we'll also say, you know, if you want a Skype chat, book a time on my calendar here. For the most part, it works out fine. So I make myself available until about 9 o'clock in the evening. And that's probably 3 days a week, three evenings a week. So I've got sort of Mondays I have off, theoretically to go climbing with my brother, although we haven't done that for 2 months. and Fridays off, because it's Friday, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
occasionally, you get someone in Australia who wants to chat. So I was up at 6 a.m. one day last week because somebody in Australia was keen for a chat. But that's, you know, I mean, I'm waking up around that time anyway, so it's not a big deal. If they don't mind me being a bit bleary-eyed, that's okay by me. And, I mean, support-wise, because it's not an application where they're going in and doing stuff in it. You know, they're going in and looking at views over data in Trello. It seems like I generally get support requests in the first couple of weeks when people are trying it out. And then if they're happy, they become a customer. And then I don't really hear from them for the most part. You know, if I hear from them, it's because there's a bug. And the solution to that is to fix a bug rather than keep on responding to support requests about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. So you mentioned Traction was one of the books that you've you've taken some stuff from. What other resources do you use to learn from? Some books, podcasts, etc.?
Oof, that's a good question, actually. So, I mean, podcasts, it's the usual list that everyone's got his startups for the rest of us. Really like TechZing. I mean, that's one of my, you know, if that's in my podcatcher, I'll listen to that before pretty much anything else. But they talk a lot less about the bootstrapping startup-y side of things nowadays because they've sort of, Jason's sort of moved on from that world, hasn't he, a little bit. Most of my stuff is kind of just in time learning, I think. You know, I kind of wait until I need to know about something. So one of the things I subscribed to recently was from the was it Nights and Weekends podcast, which is another good listen, and they often mention a lot of good resources on there. But they mentioned the Art of Paid Traffic and Perpetual Traffic podcast, which I signed up to. But then I've not listened to any of it because I'm not in that world quite yet. But I've got them in there kind of as a reminder. So when I do start doing paid advertising, or if it starts working, I'll be like, okay, now I'll go and listen to as much of that as possible.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, cool. Excellent. Well, thanks for your time and for telling us about that. It's a fantastic story. And I hope you go from strength to strength.
All right. Thanks. Yeah.
So if people want to get in touch with you or find out more about you, where can they find you?
So Twitter is probably the easiest place to find me. So I'm Robin Warren on Twitter. Corello is at Get Corello. So that's Two R's and two L's in Corello. If it's kind of like Correlate and Trello. It was my wife's idea for a name, which is far better than the names I was coming up with at the time.
So, I like the name. Yeah.
So they can find Corello there, getcorello.com, and my email address is robin@getcorello if they want to email me there, ask me any questions or follow up on anything I've said here. Yeah, happy to expand on any of that for anyone.
Excellent, great. I'll put those in the show notes as well.
Cool.
Yeah, thanks very much.
All right, cheers, Martin.
Cheers, then.
Bye.